There was an old newspaper cartoon. It depicted the following scene. There's a UFO, like a flying disc of sorts. It's crashed into the ground. And there's fire and smoke billowing from the wreckage. There are two creatures standing next to the accident. And they appear not to be human creatures. They appear to be creatures from another planet. They have tentacles. They have antennas with eyes on the end. And one of them is yelling at the other. And the caption under the cartoon says, "One bee? One little bee and you just lose it?" So apparently, driving intergalactically, got a little thrown off by a bee. That's what happened to his poor UFO. We never like to explain a joke, but something silly about when you're driving across the universe, getting thrown off by a little bee. So Yosef is being sold into slavery. His whole life appears to be behind him. His own brothers betrayed him. And he's sitting in the back of the wagon of the Ishmaelim, which is not a good wagon to be in the back of. And the pasuk tells us that it smells nice. There are things that they're selling, things that smell nice. And Rashi says, this is the zchus that tzaddikim have, matan zcharin shel tzaddikim, that it smells nice. And the question is obvious. He's being sold into slavery. He's losing his whole life. Why does it matter that it smells nice? Rav Elia Baruch Finkel, that's how, in his sefer on the Chumash, Mishulchan Rav Elia Baruch, has 7 pshatim to answer this question. Don't worry, I'm not going to say all of them. But he explains how each of these pshatim is given by a different yeshiva, a different school of thought, and how each one has their value and their contribution. So let's take a look at some of the pshatim he shares, and then just the idea of culling from other places. So one pshat he brings is from the school of thought of Slobodka. In the Slobodka yeshiva, the school of thought was referred to as godless Adam, appreciating how special the human being is, the greatness of a human being. So with this in mind, what he says is that Yosef HaTzadik, when he's in this wagon, he still knows he's a prince. He still knows who he is. He still has his sensitivity. And with that in mind, with that sensitivity, he still knows what's going on around him. And he still appreciates when the atmosphere is a nice place. He still understands that. He doesn't lose his identity. He doesn't lose who he is. Someone once described the following scene to me. Someone was living in an apartment in Eretz Yisrael with a bunch of friends. They were learning in yeshiva. They had a deer there, as they call it. And sometimes what the deer could look like is something like if you had camp for 6 months with no cleanup. So there's stuff on the floor, there's stuff on the chairs, there's dirty dishes. That's what it can look like. And one guy would come downstairs every morning with his house robe and his mug, and they said he looked like royalty. So the incongruity is funny, but there's a little something to it. A little something to a person appreciating that a human being is a Tzelem Elokim, and a Jew is a prince. Years ago, I was a teenager. Somebody was in the dining room in yeshiva, the yeshiva I was in, and he was chugging soda from a 2-liter bottle. And the janitor, of all people, gives him this look. Like, I thought you were the rabbi. What's with the chugging from a 2-liter bottle? And the guy was very moved. He never did it again. So whatever we do, we have to remember that we're royalty. And whatever we do, we should do it like royalty. And that's idea number one. Another answer he brings is from the Yeshiva of Novartek. The Yeshiva of Novartek is almost the exact opposite. They emphasized shiftless Adam, the lowly state of humanity. We all have failings. We all have shortcomings. We all have needs. And if we think about this, we won't let things get to our heads. As a sidebar, even yeshivas that are related to Novartek today do not follow the school of thought. It's not really for our generation. But this answer is great. Even when a person is in a difficult situation, even when someone is sitting in the back of a wagon, not in a good place, we still notice things that get on our nerves. It's human nature. It still just bothers us. I heard a very almost wacky story. Somebody, tragically, lost his mother. He was 15 years old. And she passed away. She was very young, very sad, very sudden, the whole thing. Very, very sad. And this kid's sitting shiva with his siblings and maybe aunts, uncles, his father, and maybe even grandparents. And he asks his sister if she could pass the tuna salad. And she looks over the thing. She says, "Oh, sorry, it's empty." And he goes, "Oh my gosh, first mom dies and now there's no tuna salad?" So sometimes even the silly things just get to us, even in serious moments. It's the truth. So that's the answer based on the Novartek school of thought. The next answer he brings is from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in Sichas Musar. And incidentally, Reb Eliezer Baruch was in the mirror for many decades. This was his yeshiva. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz explains that sometimes, even when a person is going through a difficult time, Hashem sends us a silver lining. Sometimes it even comes out of nowhere. And the reason he's doing that is to remind us that we're not here by accident. Hashem put us here. Hashem has a plan. Hashem is with us. And Hashem still loves us. And he uses this to answer Akasha about Hanukkah. Because we know there are two main categories of nes relevant to Hanukkah that we celebrate. There's the nes of the war, and then there's the nes of the shemen. When the Gemara tells this story, it emphasizes the nes of the shemen. And then it says, because of the nes of the shemen, they made them days of hallel and hodah, days of praise and gratitude. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asks, why is that the thing we're so grateful for? That's not the thing that got us out of trouble. It was nice, it was important, but why is that grounds for gratitude? Or the main thing that causes the gratitude? And he explains it's because that was the moment where Hashem was telling us he's still with it, he's still with us, this is his plan, and he still loves us. One of the hostages, Eli Sharabi, who came out with a book and he did the rounds on the podcast, described an incredible thing. He said some of the younger hostages were together with him, and he said that he would make them daily think of nice things that happened to them. Nice things in tunnels under Gaza. Nice things that happened to them, and keep track. And he was coming from a place of health, for which it's also very important, but just the idea that they were able to find things to be grateful for is incredible. And of course, it shows us that Hashem sends us these silver linings. But the very idea that Reb Eliezer Baruch pulls together different schools of thought shows something very valuable. And that is seeing the importance and appreciating someone else's perspective. Human nature can often lead us to become tribal. We appreciate our community, our yeshiva, our style, our way, and we kind of dismiss other people. And what he's doing with this is seeing what there is to appreciate in other yeshivas, other schools of thought, and what we can learn from them. And this idea is true not only in our learning and in our avodah, but also in our friendships and in our interactions. Mefarshim, as we know, all discuss at great length, how could it be that Yosef's brothers sold him into slavery? What was going on? How did these tzaddikim sell their own brother into slavery, what was happening? This foreigner says a really fascinating shot. He says that Yaakov Avinu had put Yosef in charge of the shepherding job. He was the one in charge of all the brothers. That was why he gave him the Ksenas Pasim. The Ksenas Pasim was his uniform. He was in charge. The brothers didn't like this so much because he does not say that they minded him being in charge, but he does say that when he brought Dibasam El Avihem, when he spoke badly of them to his father, he was saying that they didn't do a good job in their shepherding. He was correcting them on their shepherding. And they thought that when he told the dreams, he was trying to trip them up and make them look bad. And they thought Yosef was coming after them. So when Yosef comes to them in Shechem, they thought he had come to kill them. So they got up to kill him because they thought he was coming to kill them. And according to this Sfarnei, what we're seeing is one giant misunderstanding. The brothers thought Yosef was out to get them. Yosef did not realize that the brothers were upset. He didn't see it. He didn't understand. So this whole tragedy happens, according to this pshat, because people didn't see each other's perspectives. And on the flip side, this ends up well at the end of the parsha. There's a description of the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOifim at the end of the parsha that seems very wordy. And our first explains that the reason why is because when Yosef was speaking to them, he didn't just see just another couple of guys. He didn't just see just another couple of workers in the palace. He didn't see them like that. He saw them with a lot of detail and with a lot of nuance. He saw where they were coming from. He saw where they are. He saw where they might be going. He really saw them. And with that, he was able to appreciate them such that he could interpret their dreams effectively. And this ability to understand other people was the beginning of his Yeshua. I never pass up on an opportunity to reference my podcast. So there was a story someone said in my podcast when Dr. Shlomo Radcliffe. And the story was, when he was in yeshiva, he was struggling with learning. He had ADHD, and it wasn't diagnosed until many years later. So he found kind of other ways to keep himself busy and kind of hung out with the guys who weren't so into the learning. And it was not a great experience for him. And he said his rebbeim did not come over to offer him help. And he said why. He said he had, personally, had social anxiety. So he was scared to go over to them. And he presented this image of being standoffish. He wasn't forthcoming to their rebbeim. The real reason why was because of his anxiety. The way they took it was because they thought he was Mr. Cool. He didn't seem to want to show up to learn, or wasn't so into it. He took up breakdancing, so they misread for good reason. But it was a shame, because he really did want someone to come help him. Baruch Hashem, he found learning as he got older. But that's the value of seeing someone else's perspective and looking for someone else's perspective. Someone who used to be in yeshiva here, taught here, his name is Noam Lazarus, told me when he was in graduate school, the professor gave them a paper or a theory written by a professor somewhere else in an Ivy League school. And the professor dismissed this paper, said his theory is no good, and let's tell you mine. And Noam said, this guy's a smart guy. He's a professor in a fancy place, back when that was a good thing. And it can't be that his whole theory is like just a joke like that. Like you could dismiss it out of hand. So he put some time into thinking about it, and he realized an answer to the professor's question. And he told the professor. And the professor said, "Well, you looks like you put some thought on that. Could you do some research on that and teach me more about it? I'd like to hear it." And Noam told me that the tool that he used for this was really the tool that we have when we sit and learn. We're trying to understand machlokes, we're trying to understand We're really working on understanding another perspective. So we're really primed, more than most, to understand another perspective. So let's take all these lessons. Have a great Shabbos.
Who you're referring to as the far side.
Yes.